NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. A new year often brings new hope, and that's certainly the case for the housing market here in the Granite State. At the end of last year, realtors and economists had reason to feel some New Year's cheer about housing. Home sales in 2012 were at their highest since the housing bust of the late 2000s. And that increase was more than a blip, it was dramatic, with almost 13,000 single-family homes sold in New Hampshire last year, compared to fewer than 11,000 the year before. Still, as is so often the case with the real estate sector, the glass can easily be seen as half full or half empty. Foreclosures remain a stubborn problem here, although they've declined a bit. Also, prices have barely budged in recent years. Good news if you're looking to buy, yet frustrating to homeowners who might want to sell but just can't stomach how much money they'd lose in the process. Meanwhile, on the mortgage front, new rules from the federal government are being praised in some corners, criticized in others. The regulations are aimed at getting small, local lenders more involved in mortgages, given that it's the mega banks who were often blamed for the housing crash that triggered the recession. Today in The Exchange, we examine how housing is doing in the Granite State, and let's hear from you. What's happening with real estate in your neighborhood or your town? Does it appear to be picking up or getting worse? Also, if you're in the market yourself, either as a buyer or a seller, what's your perspective, given your personal experience? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on the Exchange page at nhpr.org. We have two guests. Russ Thibault is here in studio, president of Applied Economic Research, an economic and real estate consulting firm based in Laconia. Russ, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here, Laura.
Also with us by phone, Brian Gottlob, principal of Polycon Research, a firm focusing on economic and public policy issues based in Dover. And Brian, welcome. Good to have you, too.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, both of you, I just want to ask you real broadly before we get into the specifics. A recent Union Leader article said, I'm quoting here, 2013 could be the beginning of a full-scale real estate recovery here in New Hampshire. What do you think, Russ?
Well, I don't think it's quite time to break out the champagne, but I think it might be okay to pop one of those leftover beers from the Super Bowl. I think, you know, things are better. There's no question about it. The things that should be going up are going up, mainly prices are going up, sales are up, affordability is up, and the things that should be going down are going down, things like foreclosures, the inventory, and interest rates. So we're in much better shape, I think, than we were last year at this time. And I've got to tell you candidly, I'm getting sick of talking about the housing crisis. And I'm looking forward to things having a sustained a recovery during the year. But I don't think it's going to be crazy. There's a lot of cross currents here. Despite the things that are getting better, what we've seen is during the last quarter of the year, for example, nationally, the economy contracted. We added 150,000 jobs in December. That's barely enough to keep pace with the rise in the labor force. So the foundation of this recovery still hasn't truly firmed up. I think it's a little premature to say we're going to have a booming market. But I'll tell you, in some markets, it's really remarkable. If you look at the Case-Shiller Index, which looks at home prices nationally, San Francisco prices are up 22% this year. If that were the case here in New Hampshire, our median price of $199 would be almost $250,000.
So I think this is a theme we'll come back to again and again, Russ, the idea that you can't just look at the housing market. It's determined by jobs. It's determined by the overall economy. It's determined by interest rates, is determined by a lot of other things.
Oh, yeah. And I think that affordability is the big positive thing right now, and the strength of the economy is the risk right now. So those are the two major cross currents. Affordability is a positive thing, and the continued weak economic recovery is sort of the risk factor.
Okay, well, Brian, if we're going to take Russ's analogy, don't pop the champagne, but maybe open up a beer left over from the Super Bowl. From what I understand about you, Brian, you're a little more bearish on the housing market. You're probably just pouring yourself a glass of water right now.
Yeah, I'm having a cold sip of water. I think Russ is accurate in that the housing market, you know, we've moved beyond the crisis point, I think. But when I look at what's happening in New Hampshire anyway, I'm not really concerned with what's happening nationally in terms of a market recovery. And I do believe nationally housing has made some really significant improvements, and particularly in some of the hardest hit markets. In New Hampshire, I look at a couple of key indicators, and to assess what's going to happen in 2013, really have to have a sense that New Hampshire is going to add jobs at a greater rate than it has over the last couple of years. If you look not only in New Hampshire, but nationally, there's a very strong relationship between job growth and the housing market, and particularly price appreciation. So New Hampshire really didn't add any jobs over the past year, very few over the past couple of years. And until that changes, it's not likely that the housing market is really going to see significant recovery. And right now, at least, we don't see the job increasing in New Hampshire the way we would like. If that happens in 2013, yeah, we can begin maybe to pop some champagne.
Well, and you've written, Brian, that, you know, that old saying, demographics is destiny, is certainly
right.
True for the housing market. Tell us how New Hampshire's particular demographics are not great for housing.
Yeah, well, a couple of things. I mean, if you look at what drives housing market, I'm a big believer it's all about the fundamentals, and the fundamentals are the health of the economy and demographic trends. And the most obvious demographic trend is what's happening with population growth. And New Hampshire has not seen population growth over the last couple of years. If you break that down even further, you look at what are some of the key demographic elements that contribute to a strong housing market. And one of the big drivers is the percentage of the population that's relatively young in their working lives, age 25 to 34. They're a really important part of the market because it's at the time when a lot of people purchase their first homes or condominiums. And right now, that population is smaller in New Hampshire, and it's not growing the way we would like. Beyond that, and I know I'm getting into some other issues here, the ones in that demographic group who are in New Hampshire who might be purchasing have been hit particularly hard during this past recession. Their unemployment rates have been a little bit higher. Many of them are saddled with things like student debt, higher levels of student debt. Their incomes haven't grown. So their ability to purchase homes has been really significantly hurt. They don't have the big down payments that are required nowadays. When you add that all up, you wind up with a greatly diminished ability to purchase their first homes. And, of course, when that happens, it affects the market all the way down the line. Individuals who are looking perhaps to trade up to buy a bigger house, their families are growing, they have to sell to somebody. And many times they sell to that first-time buyer. So it has ripple effects throughout the whole housing market.
Wow. Real interesting. Russ, what do you think? The demographics behind housing, Brian's saying, don't look great for New Hampshire.
Well, that's true. And Brian spoke about the younger cohorts, first-time home buyers. There's another aspect of demographics that I know Brian's familiar with because we've been on the same stage talking about this, which is if you look at New Hampshire's population growth during the last decade, 2000 to 2010, all of our population growth, net growth, was age 55 and over. Those people, by and large, have their housing issues settled. They're in the home that they're probably going to stay in until they absolutely have to move, which often is in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of talk about, well, the boomers are going to move out of their four-bedroom homes into, you know, two-bedroom condos. That doesn't happen very often. So there's not only do we not have many young people, and in fact had net out-migration of people in the 20 to 34-year-old age category, but we've got an awful lot of people whose housing situation is settled and isn't going to change. That said, I still think that there's reason to open that can of beer, and it's affordability. Brian's absolutely right. The economy isn't growing very fast in New Hampshire at all. We have virtually no net job growth. But if you look, go back to 2005 and you look at the median home price in New Hampshire, which was about $250,000, and the interest rate was about 6.5% then. And then you move forward to today, the median price is $199,000, down 20%. That's not a good thing for those people that bought in back in 2005. But it's down 20%, and interest rates are about half what they were back then. So that if back then, if you paid $1,000 a month on a mortgage, you'd get about a $150,000 mortgage. Today, you get a $250,000 mortgage for that same $1,000 a month payment. Overall, this is the bottom line on affordability. The median priced home in New Hampshire is only half as expensive to buy on a principal and interest basis than back in when the 2005 when things began to fall apart. So affordability is markedly improved. Not to discredit what Brian's saying, but this is a really big deal.
Yeah.
Housing is more affordable now. I've been doing this work for 40 years. Housing's more affordable now than at any time in those 40 years, and that's a big deal.
I want to invite our listeners to join us, and then a lot more questions. Following up on what you said, Russ, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, we're looking at how housing is doing in the Granite State. We want your perspective, whether just looking around your neighborhood, around your town, or if you're in the market yourself as a buyer or a seller. What do you think? What's your perspective on this, given your own personal experience? The number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Real quick, Russ, picking up on what you said, I hear you on the affordability. Prices are down. Interest rates are down. One of our producers went to an event recently representing the station, ended up talking to a young guy who works at one of these terrific, you know, high-tech companies in the Mill Yard in Manchester, great company, growing and so forth. And he was in his early 30s, and he said, you know, my girlfriend and I would love to buy a house and start a family, but we have such high student debt that it almost doesn't matter how affordable it is.
That's right. The lending standards have increased, and the amount of outstanding debt has become a major factor in loan qualification, much more so than when the downturn began, and much more so than when the housing bubble was expanding. So it's true. Housing's very affordable if you can afford it.
Yeah. Not very encouraging for someone in that situation.
Yeah, loan qualification standards are more rigorous, and a lot of people feel they're too rigorous now, that the pendulum has swung too far.
So, well, and we'll definitely pick up on that after a break in our next segment. We'll look at this idea of loans and whether they become now too hard to get in reaction to the housing crash. We'll also start taking your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Mike Danielli. Classical New Hampshire is a classical music service in the Granite State. It's a partnership between NHPR and Highland Community Broadcasting. Classical New Hampshire brings the best classical music performances from around the world to New Hampshire. Online everywhere at classicalnh.org. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from Sabernet Communications, a locally operated telecom provider building an 850-mile fiber network to connect communities, schools, and businesses. And from Dartmouth-Hitchcock, developing new, sustainable models of healthcare, improving lives for generations to come. Information at dartmouthhitchcock.org. It's 9:20. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Canoy. Today in The Exchange, how's the housing market in New Hampshire? We invite you to join us with your thoughts, observations, questions, 1-800-892-6477, or send a short email to exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests for the hour are Russ Tebow, President of Applied Economic Research, and Brian Gottlob, Principal of Polycon Research. And gentlemen, I want to bring another voice into our conversation now. We're going to Bill Weidecker, President of the New Hampshire Association of Realtors and a realtor with Keller Williams Metropolitan Realty in Bedford. And Bill Weidecker, good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, I know realtors tend to be an optimistic bunch, but how optimistic are you feeling about 2013, Bill?
Well, I'm extremely encouraged, partly because of what we're seeing for activity in the month of January, what we've seen in the month of January, and what's shaping up to be a very early start in the spring market. So I'm feeling like we've turned a bit of the corner, but I don't think it's time to trot out the punch bowl at the party just yet.
But you're hoping an early spring in 2013. I know spring is the typical pickup time. You're saying it's starting to happen even now in February.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Who's buying, Bill, these days, and who is still kind of locked out of the market, even though they might want to be in it?
Well, I think what we're finding is there's activity in just about every price range. Now, of course, as you go higher and higher, there's less and less buyers. So, I happen to sell real estate in the Greater Manchester area in one of the suburbs, Bedford. As you start to get north of $500,000, your activity is really dependent upon what's taking place just below you, because as houses start to sell.
People are trading up, and if you don't have those initial people who can buy their first-time homes, you get kind of stuck. Is that what you're saying, Bill? I think we lost Bill. I do apologize. Bill, are you there? Okay, we were hoping to talk to Bill Weidecker again with the New Hampshire Association of Realtors. Bill, you're back. Thank you very much for being back with us. Real quick question. You were talking about how the high end of the market is a little sticky. Is that what you were saying?
Well, what we're finding is things need to percolate just beneath each and every price point in order for those buyers to trade up. And that's starting to take place. So I anticipate that while the higher end has been a little slower over the last few years, that's going to start. We're going to see that increase.
You know, I want to ask you about prices, Bill, if I could, please. Obviously, low home prices are bad news for sellers, good news for buyers. But we sometimes hear from people when we talk about real estate on this program. Callers will call in and say, look, I'm not going to buy until prices go even lower. I don't think they've hit rock bottom yet. What do you say to those people?
Well, the only way to accurately pick a bottom is to look back at it. you can't say, well, I think we're there, and know beyond the shadow of a doubt. I feel like we're at bottom or have surpassed bottom or maybe close, but I can't tell you unequivocally that any of those three statements is entirely accurate. The only way we're going to be able to know is to go 12 months, 18 months out and look back and go, you know what? That was the bottom.
Yeah, should have done it then, right?
Sure. And for those that are looking to pick a bottom, you have to make a whole bunch of accurate decisions. And number one, you've got to also make sure that your interest rates are, you know, you can wait for prices to go down, but what happens if interest rates change a little bit? Your affordability might change drastically, but just a small, you know, an eighth to a quarter of a point in fixed interest rates can change your affordability dramatically.
You know, Bill, we talk about New Hampshire's housing market as it's sort of this one whole, but I'm guessing there's a fair bit of variation from region to region when it comes to the strength or weakness of the real estate sector. What do you see in the different regions of New Hampshire?
Well, you know, as I've said to clients of mine, as the populated counties go, so does the state. So if you look at Hillsborough County last year versus the entire state sales were up about 21% in units. So Hillsborough County was about 23%. Merrimack County was about 22%. If you look at Rockingham County, it was just under 21%. They all mirror what's going on with the state. So the less populated areas are just sort of trail behind a little bit. But then you take for instance, Coos County, which was up 24% last year, but the numbers are very small. You have unit sales of 367 last year versus just under 300 the year before. So it doesn't take a lot to have a dramatic increase in percentage. But I feel like the populated areas are what drive our numbers.
Yeah, so sounds like pretty much uniform increases across the state and of at least 20%. That's pretty big, Bill.
Absolutely. It's interesting to note that none of the counties were beneath 17% last year in terms of an increase. Now, that having been said, I really want to also point out that we haven't seen the dramatic price increases. So while these numbers are very encouraging, I don't want potential sellers to get the idea that, okay, you know, maybe we've seen a 5 to 10% appreciation in our home values. Not the case. It really, statewide, was less than 0.1% last year. Now, albeit it was appreciation, but really nominal.
So are you saying sellers shouldn't ask for too much? Is that the message there?
I think sellers that are realistic in what they're asking right now are finding a very, very brisk market. If they're priced outside of the market, it's going to sit. It's going to languish. There's no real change in with regard to pricing. Whereas before, you know, in the early 2000s, if you were priced outside of the market, it didn't take very long for you to be priced in the market because the market appreciated at such a rapid rate. You could be 5% too high, and within 6 to 12 months, you were priced accurately.
Well, Bill, thank you very much for talking with us. Interesting stuff.
My pleasure.
That's Bill Weidecker. He's president of the New Hampshire Association of Realtors and a realtor with Keller Williams Metropolitan Realty in Bedford. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And before we go to our listeners, gentlemen, Brian Gottlob, to you. I thought that was real interesting. In some years, we've seen, dramatic growth in real estate in one part of the state, slow growth elsewhere, a sort of patchwork when it comes to real estate right in New Hampshire, but not now, Brian.
Yeah, and I think that reflects kind of the general pattern that we have in the state, which, again, going back to fundamentals, is there isn't one part of the state that's growing much more rapidly than another. There aren't jobs being created on the seacoast or in the Hillsborough County much faster than they are in the Monadnock region or the North Country. So when the entire state is performing relatively similarly in terms of economics, in terms of job growth and population growth, I wouldn't expect to see big differences in terms of home price appreciation.
Let's take some calls, gentlemen. And again, the number for you to join us with your questions, comments, personal experiences on how the housing market is doing here in New Hampshire is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And let's see, in Wells River, Vermont, Bob is on the air. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hey, hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm sitting here with a lot of snow on the ground, and I was wondering if your commentators could put in perspective the seasonality of the market here in New England as opposed to maybe places that are a little less, seasonal.
Yeah, no, it's a good point, and you're lucky to have snow, Bob. We don't have any in Concord, so good for you. What do you think, Russ?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely a strong seasonality to the market. I track things monthly, and the chart sometimes looks like something that comes out of a medical lab, you know, where things are up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. Definitely seasonality plays into it, and we're heading into the stronger season, selling season, which is pretty much April through October, particularly here in New Hampshire. In Belknap County, 30% of the units are vacation housing. That market's very dormant during the winter. And likewise in the Mount Washington Valley area and in the Lincoln area. So a lot of our housing is seasonal, and we don't talk about that very much. But beyond that, just the weather, kids coming into school, leaving, graduating. So the whole school season also has an effect. So very much so, a strong seasonality. You can't read much during the last quarter, whatever happened from like October through December. It's really not indicative of too much.
That's why it's important to look month to month then. I mean, not month to month, but like, you know, March of one year versus March of another year.
Well, more than that, just even quarter to quarter, because you get a lot of monthly variations in New Hampshire as well because it's a relatively small market.
Well, thanks for that call. And let's take another one if we could. This is Paul in Newington. Go ahead, Paul. You're on the exchange.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to everybody. And one of the things I wanted to say, I've owned two pieces of property, and I've sold them to two young couples who had kids. And it was really kind of an uplifting experience to see people buy their first home.
Yeah, so you sold to that classic first-time home buyer, Paul.
I don't know. One of them might have been an investment buyer, but they were still a young couple.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what I'm saying is that it's okay to give up your property because it's really about location.
Yeah.
So, I always bought a really nice location, and I rented it for a while, and as far as I was concerned. And it's just fun to see people move on to their lives with the place that you had lived in and had a really good experience as well.
Right. Paul, thanks for calling. And Brian, what do you pull out of that comment from Paul?
Well, the interesting thing, when he mentioned the investor aspect of it, and I've been wondering about that, one of the theories that I have is that some of the sales activity is elevated because I think we have more investors who are buying properties at a very affordable rate. We've talked a lot about affordability. It's not just the young homeowners. It's people who are looking at housing as an investment. And I think that's played a larger role in the sales activity than a lot of people would have thought. And when you look at that, that accounts for some of that relatively low appreciation or no appreciation, despite the fact that you have 20% increase in sales. The investors are going to buy at the lowest possible rate. And in some cases, when I look at the data on construction activity, it looks like there's a lot of remodeling going on, not a lot of building. And I'm wondering if a lot of this isn't being bought by investors and then turned into rental properties, because the rental market is pretty strong.
Russ.
Yeah, I think that the caller points out is that at this point, it's almost cheaper to buy than rent in terms of the monthly mortgage payment is going to be on the median priced home in New Hampshire is about the same as the monthly rent on a two-bedroom unit. Now, if you buy, you got to pay taxes, you got to pay utilities, you got to pay insurance. So there's other costs that add up. But the ratio of monthly cost of owning versus renting is about as low as it's been. And that's usually a sign that if there's a leading indicator in housing, that's often a sign that prices are about to appreciate again as people move from rental into owner.
And if I could just jump in, that interest rate issue is really important, and not so much in New Hampshire, but I think it's accounting for some of that price appreciation we're seeing across the country.
Without question.
You've got interest rates that are so low, well, that gets capitalized into the price that a house can sell at. Somebody who's paying a very low interest rate will pay more for the house because of the things Russ talked about. The monthly mortgage payment will still be low. They can pay a higher price for the house because of the low interest rate. But that introduces another significant risk to the housing market because interest rates are low now. They're probably going to be low for a while, but they won't always be low. And when they're not low, that's going to have a negative impact on the price at which homes can sell. So I think while it's great to say in some places the prices are rising dramatically, I wonder how much of that is related to interest rates and how much additional risk that introduces into the selling prices.
Well, and as we talk about interest rates and mortgages, gentlemen, I want to bring Joseph Moriarty into our conversation now. He's on the Board of Governors of the Mortgage Bankers and Brokers Association of New Hampshire. He's also president of Guardian Mortgage Corporation in Manchester. And Joseph, before I go any further, you told us that we also had to read something very specific about your title by law. So I'm going to read it now and then ask you about it. Joseph is also licensed by the New Hampshire Banking Department, NMLS number 70242, personal NMLS 70384. I have to tell you, Mr. Moriarty, that's the first time I've had to read such a specific title on the air. Is that a new rule that you have to give those numbers out?
Well, under the SAFE Act and under the Dodd-Frank Act, in order to protect the consumer, originators now have to be licensed if they work for a non-depository, for example, a mortgage company or mortgage broker. And in a depository case, they have to be registered. So everybody has a registration number. And that's so the consumer can, there's a potential problem with the mortgage down the road, the consumer and the federal government can go back to that specific number and see whether or not there was any fraudulent activity. And it is a Banking Department and SAFE Act requirement.
Wow. So you have to give out those two numbers.
Absolutely.
Every time you identify yourself.
Absolutely. In any media, in any writing, any correspondence, any advertising, it should be, and including email.
Wow. Well, we talked a little bit earlier, Joseph, if I could ask you this. We talked a little bit earlier about how, you know, everybody knows that in the mid-2000s, loans were given out much too easily. Then the crash happened. Now some people are saying that it's too hard to get a mortgage, especially for, you know, young couples looking to buy their first home. What do you think?
Well, I think that in any situation, the pendulum swings one way or the other. And under the Dodd-Frank Act, there are new rules that have come into place that talk about affordability, to talk about documentation, talk about compliance issues. And it is, I don't want to use the word restrictive, but it's much more detail-oriented. And to give you even a specific example, if you're getting a gift from a parent, not only do you have to have proof that you got a gift from the parent, but you actually have to have proof of the parent's bank statement, to look at their bank statement to see that they had the asset to give it to you. So not only does it include you personally, but if you're using someone in your family to help you attain that mortgage, they are going to look for where that asset came from, and they're going to want to see written documentation of that.
Wow, so those piles of documents that you sign when you get a mortgage are going to get even thicker? Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Wow.
That's correct.
Well, you know, New Hampshire bankers often say, look, the local banks, the littler guys, didn't create the housing crisis. It was the mega banks. It was the other Wall Street institutions that engaged in risky business. How would you say, though, that given what we saw, Joseph, lending practices have changed here in New Hampshire by, you know, smaller lenders?
Well, I think across the board, I think what you're looking at, and you know, my attitude towards it, and I've worked for a small bank at one time. My attitude is that I don't have customers; I have clients, and this is not self-promotion. And I think the smaller banks feel that way, and I think a lot of the mortgage companies feel that way. And I think that's the new attitude out there, is that I know for the Mortgage Bankers Association, Mortgage Bankers and Brokers Association in New Hampshire, we want to do what's right for the consumer, and we work very closely with the banking department to do the right things. And I think you're right. You know, I think that lending was too easy. I don't think that there's one specific person that was the cause of the problem. I think that everybody basically had a piece in that pie. Whether it was the small bank that couldn't offer that loan, and so the consumer went somewhere else, it's someone that could offer it. I think it was, you know, a whole bunch of things, and I'm hard-pressed to say that one thing or one person caused that problem.
Sure. Looking ahead toward 2013, Joseph, from your end, again, from the Mortgage Bankers and Brokers, and what do you think the new year is going to be like in terms of people who want to get in there, want to take advantage of the affordability that Russ Tebow talked about? What's it going to be like for them in terms of getting that important mortgage?
Well, I think that a client has to be prepared. You know, we talked about under the CFPB, which is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, in January of 2014, all lenders will have to adhere to certain guidelines, which is going to make it, unfortunately, a little bit more detail-oriented. It may be a little bit more restrictive as far as lending goes, and for all intents and purposes, it'll be across the board. Everybody will be treated equally. So the good news is that you will not be treated any differently than anybody else that goes for a mortgage. The bad news is it's not going to be just walk into the bank or the credit union or a mortgage broker and get a mortgage.
All right. Well, Joseph Moriarty, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Again, that's Joseph Moriarty. He's on the Board of Governors with the Mortgage Bankers and Brokers Association. He's also president of Guardian Mortgage Corporation in Manchester. After a short break, we'll keep taking your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
It's 9:39 and you're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our members, and from UNH Celebrity Series, presenting Cuban-born classical pianist Santiago Rodriguez, Tuesday, February 5th at 7 p.m. in the Johnson Theater in Durham, unh.edu/celebrity. And from Goose Bay Lumber of Chichester, providing specialty lumber for wood artisans, turners, furniture craftsmen, and boat builders, on the web at goosebaylumber.com. This is NHPR.
Ginger Lever is with UNH Manchester, an NHPR underwriter.
Supporting NHPR is very effective for any kind of organization that wants to connect with an audience, because people listen. If you go into restaurants or walking by people's cars in the parking lot, you can hear it. And that's a measure and a testimony to the fact that people are listening.
For more information about becoming an NHPR underwriter, visit the business support page on nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at how New Hampshire's housing market is faring. And you can join us, 1-800-892-6477. If you're in the market right now yourself, either as a buyer or a seller or a realtor, what's your perspective, given that you are experiencing this personally yourself right now. Also, just if you look around you in your neighborhood or your town, what do you see happening with real estate? Does it appear to be picking up? Are there homes on the market for a long time, not going anywhere? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You know, Brian Gottlob, I wanted you to follow up real quickly on something that Russ Thibault said earlier, and that's the equation between renting and buying. Where do you see that standing right now in New Hampshire?
Yeah, I think Russ is right. The affordability is as high as it's been in any time in recent memory, and he's also right that it's a great indicator of potential problems in the housing market. If you look back over the last 20 years, what you see is we can really see when bubbles are forming, and that tends to happen when the cost of purchasing a home gets about over 130% or so of rental housing. And right now, and I haven't done the numbers in several months, but we're you know, just a little bit above the cost of buying is just a little bit above the cost of renting, and in many markets, and depending on the type of rental, is actually lower. So it's a great, if you want to know whether we're getting out of hand, take a look at that ratio of the cost of purchasing a home to renting a home. And right now, what it's saying is it is very, very affordable to purchase a home. It's the housing market clearly isn't getting out of hand here. But I also want to make the point that is important, and as a good indicator as that is, it doesn't tell you about the fundamental underlying demand for housing. It's one thing to say that housing is very affordable now and it's a great time to buy, but I look a little bit longer term, and even though it's a very good time and it's very affordable, that doesn't mean that we're going to see job growth. It doesn't mean we're going to see population growth that will keep home prices appreciating. So affordability is one thing. It's not a signal. It's a cyclical event, and it's not a signal that the fundamental demand for housing, which will ultimately drive prices, is improving.
Yeah, it's kind of what Russ said earlier. It's only affordable if you can afford it, if you've got the job stability and, you know, the lack of student
right.
debt or whatever debt you might have. So let's take another call, gentlemen, and this is Eric in Chesterfield. Hi, Eric, you're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Hey, Laura, how are you?
Good.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Good. I was listening to the program and just give you a little bit about my background. I'm a mortgage lender, started lending in 1982. I worked for Countrywide. I've worked for Fleet. I work for local banks here regionally. I've been a regional underwriting manager. I've been a vice president. I've held a wide variety of ranges in the mortgage industry. And one of the things that as I was listening, one of your experts made a comment about things being difficult, or you made a comment about the difficulty in regulations these days, rules being more stringent about getting mortgage loans. What I wanted to simply say is this, two things. One, it is not that it's more stringent today. It is that we simply have rolled the rules back to the way lending used to be, with lenders doing appropriate due diligence on loans. The example that was given was a gift letter. Well, in the past, we always had to verify that parents had the asset to give to their child. This wasn't necessarily something new or new rule, but it was something that was eliminated as we moved toward what I was simply referred to as the lack of due diligence that existed for a period of time.
So back to an appropriate balance, Eric, to where we should be, you feel?
Absolutely back to an appropriate balance. We need to do due diligence on files. And then there was another question that was asked, which had specifically to do with one of the reasons that we got into this mortgage mess to begin with is the fact that we stopped doing the due diligence on loan files. And one of the primary drivers for that is the practice of credit scoring. When credit scoring was introduced as a practice in the late 80s, early 90s, the philosophy was, and this was introduced by, companies like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac through their desktop underwriter programs or automated underwriting systems, Countrywide had one called Edge. They still, I think it still might be around these days.
Well, and Eric, Countrywide was one of the earliest to fall in that big mortgage mess, right?
Absolutely.
So, yeah,
absolutely.
You're speaking from experience there. You know, Russ, this is a point that you have made, I think, before, that, you know, it's not so much that lenders are tightening up these days. It's that they're going back to what our caller calls appropriate due diligence when it comes to handing out a mortgage.
Yeah, I'm not sure I buy that completely, Laura. I think that there is still a little bit of overkill in the current underwriting standards. I refinanced my house. It was like an inch and a half of paper. I have good credit. I don't have a high loan-to-value ratio. I was just refinancing an existing mortgage. It was unbelievable. I had to sign, I don't know, 20, 30 times.
Is that all?
Yeah, it seemed to me like, wow, this is really overkill. And I'm involved in banking. I do, you know, real estate work. And on a commercial deal, the paperwork is much less. And so I think there is still a little bit of overkill, a little bit of killing the mosquito with a shovel out there on this stuff. But at the same time, there's no question, as Eric said, that back in 2002 to 2007, it was crazy. You just wrote down how much money you made, and there wasn't much verification, and it was outrageous. But I feel the pendulum's a little too far over.
Well, yeah. Eric, good to hear from you again, given your experience. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And here's an email from someone who didn't give a name, looking for a home in Manchester, who says, I'm 54, completely liquid financially, zero debt, make $70,000 a year, secure a job, to have a 25% down payment, and I can't find anything in Manchester that's affordable in the north end of town. This person says, people still want and expect $250,000 to $300,000 for a 1,500 square foot home that needs work. He says people need to get real regarding their property values. I could buy tomorrow, but I refuse to pay that kind of money for a space slightly larger than my apartment. This person concludes by saying sellers need to wake up or they'll be waiting for a long time for a buyer. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, I'm not an expert on the pricing of homes, but I think, you know, you have to think that people who are looking to sell their home are going to sell at a price. They're going to have what's called the reserve price unless they absolutely have to sell. So, you know, sellers are going to be unwilling for the most part to sell a home for less than the cost of their mortgage. They're certainly not going to want to take a loss unless they absolutely have to. If they're looking to trade up, they're not going to be able to do that, certainly. So I think, you know, homeowners do hold on and keep the prices relatively high unless they have to sell at a lower price. And I think that's probably working in this market. I think people have been more realistic. But, you know, that gentleman may have been looking in other places and had a different view that, you know, for instance, I go down to North Carolina a lot. I look at the price of housing down there and I think, wow, you know, I could buy a huge house down there compared to up here. He may have looked in other places and said, you know, why can't I get something like that in Manchester? I don't know the particulars of the gentleman, but he's right. We all have an emotional attachment to a house. If we've lived in it for a while, we think it's worth a certain amount, and we're really, really reluctant to admit that maybe it's not worth what we think it is. We put in time, we put in effort, we put in money, and that can be hard, and that keeps prices from falling.
Let's take another call, gentlemen. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Brandon's calling from Amherst. Hi, Brandon. Thanks for holding on. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just want to go back to something that was said earlier in this show, and it has to do with overall affordability. I think somebody said housing is affordable if you can afford it. And my comment has to do with relation to what we were talking about earlier with demographics and demographic shifting. It was mentioned that the demographic between 25 and 34 has kind of been hit hard over the past few years. And I fall squarely within that demographic at 28, and I'm fully ready to buy my first house. However, my overall ability to amass what I would consider, as well as what the bank would consider, an adequate down payment has been, I would say, lessened to a fair degree because of my student debt load. And I think that we parse through, you know, all these nuances of, you know, low interest rates, regulations, and whatnot. And I guess to a point, I feel like we're missing the forest through the trees. I think, you know, long term, if we're going to, you know, remedy things, I think that purchasing power or, you know, your ability to be able to amass that relatively decent down payment so that housing prices or so that housing is accessible to people like me, I think that's probably one of the key issues that's not always addressed, although you do an adequate job of addressing it, as you did earlier.
Yeah, you know, Brandon, you're right, and we've been talking about that off and on throughout the hour, Russ, that, you know, there's housing and then there's the fundamentals that drive housing, and as you guys have been pointing out, some of them look good, some of them don't.
Right. I think that Brandon raises a very good point about the amount of debt that you carry. It used to be, Eric mentioned, the mortgage broker that called in, mentioned about credit scores. Credit scores used to be the be-all and end-all of mortgage qualification. Now it's debt load plus credit score. And if there's one thing that's become much more prominent, it's that debt load. And that is keeping a lot of people out of the house, young people out of the housing market. Now, interestingly, if you look at the more mature part of the housing market, people that are ready to move up to a new house, they already have a house, 20% of them nationally are underwater in their mortgage, meaning that they own more on their mortgage than their house is worth. So that if they tried to sell their house, they'd actually have to pay money at the closing instead of getting money. So
nobody wants to do that.
Between the two of these things, Brandon's point of having a lot of debt for first-time buyers, and then for move-up buyers, a lot of them not having enough equity to sell their home, there's a lot of friction in this market.
Brian, here's an email that came in that I want to throw to you, please. This is from Frank. He says, can you ask about the rates of household formation and its effect on the housing market? This is the demographic argument that you talked about earlier, Brian.
Oh, yeah. That is really key. When I talk about fundamentals, I talk about job growth, population growth, and another one that determines the demand for housing, which ultimately determines the price, is household formations, new household formations. How many young people, basically, because that's primarily who it is, who are starting out, graduating from college or whatever, and forming their households, striking out on their own. And over the last, close to a decade now, certainly the last half of the last decade, household formations have been very low relative to history. One, because we had fewer young people for a while, but also because it has been difficult. They've been hit hard during the last recession, so they've held on longer to living at home. More of them have lived together in larger groups, recent grads. So what you find is we're not forming the number of households that we would expect. And when that happens, the demand for housing units doesn't increase as significantly. That, combined with the student loan debt, combined with a weak job market, combined with the fact that it's hard to get a down payment, really adds up to a very weak cohort of young potential buyers. And when that happens, the whole market begins to be affected.
Yeah, so that's Brendan's point also. And Frank, thank you. It's related, again, to this sort of stagnation in the 20-somethings.
Yeah, and you know, the other aspect, if you look, that marriage and fertility rates are affected by this dramatic recession. There are fewer babies being born. I actually looked at this. The fertility rates are lowest and dropped the most in states that had the weakest economies. People putting off having children, and of course when they do that, that means they're less likely to want to buy a house. A lot of us bought houses when we started families. It's all adds up to a very difficult time for that segment of the market.
I want to ask you guys about another segment of the housing market that we haven't really hit on yet. And Russ, this is to you since you're from the Lakes region, which is second home central almost.
Pretty much.
New Hampshire's always had a really important second home market, especially in the White Mountains and the Lakes region where you are. What trends are you seeing there, Russ?
The very high priced stuff on the lake is slow to sell. We've got a large inventory of homes over $1.5 million on Lake Winnipesaukee. That's had a very tough time. In fact, we've had a couple of foreclosures on the lake.
Really?
Of high end
stuff.
On
some of those McMansions that were built in the early 2000s.
Or new developments that didn't sell out before the you know, the boom crashed. So I think the high-end part of the market is actually quite weak, and that's something that hasn't happened for a long time. The sellers are willing to hang on. They've got a lot of equity in their $1.5 million, $2 million, $4 million McMansion. I think there's one you can buy for $12 million if you really want to go to the top of the market on Governor's Island in Guilford. The more moderate priced part of the second home market, the townhouse condominium, maybe off the lake, a little less stressed out, but still, this is not a vibrant market. It's a discretionary buy. People are nervous. As Brian has pointed out, the economy's not great. So it's generally not too strong. We're seeing virtually no new construction of second homes.
You know, Brian, as we keep talking about a housing recovery, the possibility, the hopes for 2013, how do you judge what's comfortable, where the market feels reasonable, and when it feels like too much, that we're entering that, you know, scary bubble territory again?
Well, I think that Russ mentioned one of the key indicators that I look at, and that's the price to price of ownership versus the rental price on a monthly basis. When that indicator begins to rise dramatically, and we saw it in the late 1980s, early 1990s, when New England and New Hampshire had our last market crash before this market crash, it got up very high. It was up 160% or so. The price of ownership was relative to rental. And so look at that. When it gets above 120-130%, then I think that's a sign that we've gotten into bubble territory.
All right. Well, Brian, good to have you. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
That's Brian Gottlob, principal of Polycon Research, a firm focusing on economic and public policy issues. Russ Thiebaud, good to see you as always.
Great to be here.
Russ Thiebaud, president of Applied Economic Research, an economic and real estate consulting firm based in Laconia. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Mike Danielli. The producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, asymmetric warfare. It's defined by a disparity between warring sides, where one is more powerful than the other and may not involve nations at all, like the so-called war on terror. It's also about using tactics which allow the weaker opponent to get the upper hand, from hijackings to cyber attacks. We look at this growing type of warfare and its impact on U.S. military policy. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
We're 1 minute.